Hi, this is Donna with the Waldorf Connection, and welcome to Lesson 3 of our Waldorf Homeschool U. And this week's class is all about your tailored curriculum and your homeschool space. So I just want to remind you that you can ask questions right on the Waldorf Homeschool U page. You can just post. It's set up as a blog, so you can just post comments below each lesson. And go ahead and just ask questions along the way. I've got some conversations going in there, but feel free to share ideas, ask questions, whatever you need. If you need more clarification on something or think of something I didn't cover, because that's what this for. This class is for you to get everything you need to get out of it, and I want to make sure that I'm giving you the right information and that I've covered everything you need. So please feel free to use that during this 6-week course as we're going along, so I can make sure to give you everything you need so you'll be successful in your homeschooling. All right, so let us go along here and get started. So we're going to talk today about kind of getting into more of the practical side of it here, and that is talking about curriculum, what homeschooling really looks like, and your space and how to set it up and all of that. So let's just talk about what does homeschooling really look like. So I think that when I started, I had this idea in my head, it was going to be this, felt a little overwhelming, a little scary maybe, and I wasn't sure exactly, what it would be and if it was going to take up most of my day and how was I going to juggle it, with all the other things that I had to do and this whole thing. And of course, anything unknown could seem a little intimidating, but, once we really got into it, and once I really had my rhythm, and again, I'm going right back to the rhythm because it is such a big key here. Having that rhythm set up that we talked about in Lesson 2 is about 80% of really what you need for homeschooling. And it may sound odd that we're talking about having that rhythm, but really that is such a key, piece. And that's why we talked about it as one of the first lessons for you to start working on your rhythm. Because what happened was, what I saw was is that most of the things we were already doing, since I had a pretty good rhythm, I'm thinking when my girl started first grade, we already had a pretty good rhythm going, and it didn't seem like we had much to add to what we already were doing. We had our morning routine that we did. We took our walk. We had breakfast. We took our walk. We came back. We did circle time, and then the rest of the day was sort of mapped out with, meals and errands and play and even getting together and doing maybe some, light handwork. Really before they were into doing handwork, we did some finger knitting and crafts and things. And we had it pretty much set up. And so when it was time for first grade, all I had to do was add the main lesson piece after the circle time. And it really seemed very effortless that there wasn't a big transition. Now we're finally homeschooling and everything's going to change and it's going to be all different. It wasn't like that at all. In fact, it was just the opposite. It almost felt like, well, surely I'm not doing this right because this just seems too easy and it just seems too flowing and there must be more to it than this. I felt like there must have been something missing or I was doing something wrong. But actually, because the rhythm was set up in such a, I had a good solid rhythm with those pillars and everything, it really did seem quite easy to make that transition over. All right, and I'm going to kind of go through here in just a few minutes, and I have it on the PDF as well, kind of the example of my day. But really, as far as what our day looks like, you might be surprised to look that it just really looks a lot like life, with some regular day-to-day activities and a little bit of homeschooling. So if you've already been bringing some Waldorf-inspired ideas like baking and singing and circle time, maybe some story time, painting, it will really feel very comparable to that. And if you haven't, if you're just sort of starting to get into that, if your children are a little bit younger, not ready for the grades, then it's perfect time for you to start establishing that and bringing something that you can call school time if you'd like, or whatever you want to call it, just circle time. It's circle time, time to get together and share. Having that in place will really make a big difference if you're planning to go on it and actually go into the grades and do the homeschooling. because it's not like you have to block off, you know, 8 hours of your day to do homeschooling. It really does not take but a few hours, and in the early grades, less than that, to get to what you need to get to. As long as there's some other things that you're doing, and there probably is other things you're doing throughout the day. Like I was saying, you might be baking, you may be, you know, doing some light handwork or craft or singing or painting, drawing, and doing some other things at other times, and I'll show you how I set up mine. But basically, you know, for those earlier grades, you know, it will really will not take more than 2 hours at the most for like a kindergarten, first or second grade. And then, you know, just as you've always been doing it with your children, they're always learning, right? I mean, they're outside in nature, and they're learning things as they go. And so there are a lot of things that happen in a homeschool environment that's just very organic, and the learning just happens. So it doesn't have to be, okay, now we're going to sit down here, and we're going to start learning about these butterflies flying around outside. I mean, it doesn't work like that. It's very organic. It's very – it just happens and just unfolds. And I made a recommendation to someone early on who had just started homeschooling, who said she didn't think she was doing enough. And I said, well, just keep a notebook or a journal or something. And you may want to do this too if you're feeling the same way or you start to feel the same way. Just jot down all the things that you are doing or little things that happen throughout the day that you consider a school or learning, you know, a learning lesson. It could be 10 minutes, you know, in the car when you're talking about math or something. But if you start, you know, keeping up with all those little things, it does add up. And just because you're not sitting in front of a desk while you're doing it doesn't mean that it's not happening and that they're not learning. You know, that's the beauty of homeschool, is that they don't have to be sitting in the traditional, you know, behind the desk, you know, with their notebooks out and their pencils, you know, to learn things. We want them to learn hands-on. We want them to do something while they're gardening, they're planting, and they're trimming, and they're raking, and they're building things and everything. It all counts towards school. So that's what I'm saying. As far as what school looks like, it really looks, it can look whatever way you want it to look, of course, but it just really looks a lot like, you know, life happening, you know, and there is a little bit of, you know, more formal school, if you will, but you can, you know, decide how you want that to look. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into setting up your homeschool space. All right, so picking a firm time to begin school. Now, I am sort of a stickler with that. You, of course, you know, there are days when we start school later, but to keep the rhythm flowing and to keep the children's attention as well as your own, you know, usually starting in the earlier morning works better. And it just depends on your schedule as far as when that'll work for you. Around 9 o'clock seems to work for us. It gives me time in the morning to, you know, get the house together, get the breakfast done, you know, throw a load of laundry in, maybe check a few emails, and then we start school. And it gives the children time to play a little bit in the morning and kind of get a little of energy out, and but not too much time that they're, like, gone. If we do start sometimes too late, it's really hard to pull them back from what they're doing when they really get involved in their play. So, and for me, it helps because it just is like, okay, it's time to get going, and I know I have to start my day. It kind of keeps me on track. And whatever time that works for you, and you have to look at your own schedule. You know, if you're getting up real early with babies or whatever, you could start at 7:30 and do some schooling, you know, around your other children's naps, feedings, or whatever, husband schedules, if maybe they're working a night shift or something, you know, depending on when your children are going to bed and getting up. You know, what's the best time? Or if you're working part-time, you may have to homeschool in the afternoon. So again, it's really hard to, you know, say a one-size-fits-all. Really, again, according to your rhythm, your own needs, your values, your, like we talked about last week with mission statements and where you are, what fits you and your family, this is something you will have to decide depending on what's going on in your own life. Are you actually the one doing the schooling? Are you having someone like a mother or a child care provider come help with lessons while you do work? There are many scenarios. There's not just a one-size-fits-all here. So you have to work out something that works for you, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But for us, this is kind of the way we've done it, and it's kind of stuck with us, and this is just, you know, what's worked for us. So I'm just giving you an example as far as picking a time and sticking with it. Also, you may want to turn off your phone ringer, you know, close your email reminders, anything that could keep distractions down, because, you know, again, while it's a blessing and it's wonderful to be schooling at home, there's also, you know, things going on in your home. It's not like you're in a classroom where you're not going to be disrupted. You know, you've got dogs barking and, you know, laundry and the phone ringing and people knocking on the door, maybe babies crying or waking up from naps. There could be other, you know, just things that happen. So just try to, if possible, it doesn't always work, but, you know, try to limit the distractions if you can. You know, whatever you can control, you know, I've got, I tell people don't call me before noon lunchtime because I won't be answering the phone, or you can just leave a message. I just devote the morning to the children and to school, and that way, and everybody's just learned, okay, and she's not going to get back with me unless it's an emergency or something, you know. That kind of a thing. So just to stick to that and try to keep your distractions to a minimum, because sometimes, you know, there's a lot of things going on. Facebook looks great. You start getting on there and surfing and doing things, and the next thing you know, an hour has gone by. You've missed that window. All right, so here's just sort of a kind of a brief outline of our day. We usually, again, begin school around 9 a.m. We do our morning routine, which are morning chores, whatever we need to do, breakfast, and then our morning walk. And then circle time is how we start. And, of course, that can last anywhere for us about 20 to 45 minutes, depending on what we include. In the earlier grades, kindergarten, first, second, it was much shorter. And it just increased a little bit more because we add some, like in the third grade, we extended it a little bit by adding the times tables, spelling practice, by throwing bean bags. I ask, give them spelling words, or we do the times tables. I did add recorder in first grade, and that is up to you if you would like to do something like that, if you want to have your recorder time within your circle time, or that could be one of those afternoon activities that you kind of come back in with your children, and I'll talk about that in a minute, where you do something at a different time depending on their you know, their attention span and just how involved you want to be with the circle time and how long you want it to go. And again, this is something we've worked out that's worked for us. And you can certainly, you know, model mine if you'd like, but you probably will have to make, you know, different adjustments depending on your children and your situation. Our first grade circle time was probably 10 to 15 minutes at most. So don't freak out if you get done and you're thinking, oh my gosh, circle time's supposed to be 30 minutes, and you just keep trying to add more stuff. It's not supposed to be that long. It's really just a short time where you come together, you know, light a candle if you'd like, have an opening verse, you do some movements and maybe some finger play, a song. We do our and I've got an example on the video there if you'd like to watch just a short. I didn't do the whole circle time, but just a couple things where we sing a song or do some movement. We do our monthly verse. You can do a seasonal verse, you know, a couple little things, and it's done. It's not supposed to be something where you're, you know, really prolonging it. Unless, you know, like I said, when you get a little older and you start doing more songs or singing longer things, playing longer recorder songs or whatever. Okay, then we move right on to main lesson, and we do our circle time in our living room, just to give you a feel, around where our sofa and our little, we just always have done it in there. We used to have carpet, and I think that's probably why we started in there, because we would sit on the carpet and we would do things and everything. We've since pulled the carpet up and just have a wood floor, but we're just so used to doing it in there. So we just, again, it's that rhythm. We just keep doing it in there. We light our candle on our little coffee table, and the girls can kind of go around the coffee table and the sofa. If we do, sometimes we just do like jumping jacks and just, you know, knee ups and things just to get the blood pumping and stretching, you know, whatever feels good. Some yoga poses, you can add those into circle time. That's really nice, a good way to, you know, kind of get things stretched out and going. And then when we finish our circle time, we move into our schoolroom, which there's pictures of it on here and on the video, which was our dining room that we never used except for like Easter and Christmas and a few holidays. The rest of the time it just sat there, being on a big, huge, unused room that we just moved some things around, and it became our craft or schoolroom where we do all of our crafts, sewing, you know, and of course school projects and anything like that. That's kind of the room, and it's great. We use it every day now. And there's plenty of room in there for us. And so we move in there and we do kind of schoolwork, you know, with the table and chairs where the girls can sit with their feet flat on the ground. We have a long table that we got from IKEA, which is, which is very inexpensive. And what I loved about it is that it has adjustable legs. So we've got the same table. I did replace the tabletop, I believe. I've had the table for years, and then we got a new tabletop last year. And as they grow, we just make the table, you know, taller so we don't have to, you know, buy a new table. And then we had stools that we replaced with, it looked like those little office chairs on wheels, but again, adjustable so that they can go higher or lower as the girls have grown, because when they started actually doing a lot of writing, it was important for them to be able to have their feet flat on the ground and sitting, you know, with the correct posture for holding the pencil and learning to write. We got that worked out in third grade, I believe, when we did cursive. So we do our main lesson, which could last anywhere from an hour. You know, it depends on what we're doing in there. If we're doing a painting day, it may be a little bit longer. For first grade, you know, in second grade, the early grades, I would say it's probably no longer than 30 minutes because, you know, you're telling a story, they're doing a drawing in the book, or you're retelling what happened the day before and they're writing out a sentence or whatever. So it really doesn't take that long, and that's the whole thing. It's not this long, drawn-out thing that you have to prepare your day for, and it's very effortless and done. You know, and it's enjoyable. They don't have to sit there for 4 hours while we go through school. So after that, you know, and I will say in the earlier days, we did have sort of a break for a snack, it seemed like. After circle time, we might have a short snack. They were always wanting snacks. So we would have a snack, I'd have them chop, or we'd have a snack for some yogurt and fruit, just cheese and crackers, something, you know, quick and easy that they could help with. And that would just kind of give them that thing to sit now through the main lesson, even if it was just 30 minutes. Now we pretty much get done around lunchtime or a little before lunchtime, and then they, you know, just go off on what I deemed or coined free play years ago, which meant, you know, they just go do their own thing, and I go, you know, and get ready to start lunch or, you know, whatever I need to do for a little while, and they go off and do free play. So it's kind of, you know, their own thing, whatever they want to do. I'm not you know, having them do anything, they can do whatever it is they choose. Then we get back together for lunch. And then in the afternoon, I usually have some kind of work I have to do. Again, they're playing, usually outside. And then I have a time where we get back together in the afternoon, usually 3 or 4 o'clock for some other kind of a, I want to say school activity, you know, kind of school in parentheses here. It could be handwork, painting, crafts, baking. Again, it could be music practice, recorder, if you're doing a foreign language, something else that you could bring in. Again, kind of, it's that in and out flow. They go play, then they come back to you. It could be just story time if you've got younger children and you're not really doing anything. It could be finger knitting or them winding a ball of yarn or helping you sort colors of yarn while you do, you know, 15 minutes of knitting, and then they watch. Again, it's just coming back. Because, you know, when you had younger children and they would just, they wanted your attention, it's like giving them that 15 minutes of attention or whatever. It's like that's just what they need. And then they go off again just in time for you to start, like, your meal prepping or whatever for dinner. And it's just like coming back. It's connecting with them again, you know, giving them a hug, reading them a story, or doing one of the, or doing something else with the lesson. If it's, you know, if they're older, of course, it may take a little bit longer. If you're involved in painting or doing something. And, of course, then they help you clean up, and then they're off to play again, and you can kind of say, okay, good. I know I've got at least 30 minutes probably that I can, you know, get in there and start getting dinner ready or getting things ready or finishing some emails or whatever you might need to do. So think of it as sort of these bursts of being together and then they go play and being together and coming together and this in and out again. This, just think of like the tide flowing in and out, because you don't want to just say, oh, okay, I'll see you in a few hours, because that won't work anyway. They'll be like, where are you? You know, what are you doing? They just want to know you're still there, and they want to know that, to have that connection. So if you build that into your rhythm and into your day, it just makes things easier, and it won't have to feel like, oh, they're bugging me again. I'm never going to get all these chores done or whatever. And then, of course, it depends on your day. If you've got errands or things to do, then it could be the same thing. You know, maybe you've gone out to do some errands, and then when you get home, you know, you do a short thing together, and then they're off to play. So really, if you can, if you see, think about it, it is really just a lot of life here, you know, with homeschooling mixed in, because, you know, during that day, you'll be doing all of the other things that you need to do, you know, washing the dishes and doing the laundry and, you know, letting the dog out, you know, or whatever that, you know, feeding the baby or whatever that you need to do. So these all just kind of come in between in these little snippets throughout the day. And if anybody has questions on this, please, you know, go ahead and ask. Okay, here. I had a note here that said, really, it just took me years to establish this and get this right for our family. It did. It's a process. It's not something that you're like, oh, okay, great, I've got it. You know, it may have to change. You may have to tweak things if things aren't working and you're trying something over and over going, and you just have a feeling that it's, this is just not working. I'm not feeling right about it. You know, to have another pair of eyes look at it. Maybe someone else has a question, or you can post, like, I'm trying this, but it's just not working. And, you know, you may be just, like, thinking it has to be this certain way. And instead, you know, think out of the box a little bit, you know, and say, maybe we really need to shift this whole thing around and kind of look at it from a different perspective, or ask someone who's close to you, who knows you, you know, to help you. Maybe it's just nice sometimes to have someone else look at a situation if you've been trying to make it work and it just isn't. Or maybe you're trying too hard to kind of force something you really want, but it's not working for your family. So kind of keep that in mind. But it is kind of a process, and you will keep tweaking it. Again, so this kind of how do I get there from here, you know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. It's building, building this whole thing. And it takes a while. It's not just going to, you know, happen overnight. Start with the rhythm. Start with, you know, getting the bedtime routines and the morning routines and the meals plans and everything in place. And then build the next thing, and then add the next thing, and then add the next thing. You know, once you get something going for a couple weeks, add the next thing. You know, don't try to just scrap and redo the whole rhythm in one weekend, and then you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I got to do all of this, and it's going to seem very overwhelming. So just try to add little things as you go and build on it. Know that it's okay if it doesn't, if you're over here and you're trying to get over here, it's all right if you just take short little steps and make the steps in the right direction and just keep moving to where you want to go. As long as you're staying on that path and you're going in the right direction, then that's it. I mean, we're all on a path. We're all, everything's, nothing's ever perfect here. Nothing ever goes exactly the way I would love it to go, but I try to get as close as I can. I try to make sure I'm staying true to what I really want for my children, and also what is accomplished, what I can actually accomplish without, you know, killing myself with exhaustion and putting all these, you know, too many goals that I know I'll never be able to obtain, you know, and just trying to reach so high that I just, you know, I'm so frustrated. So being realistic with all of that. And like I said, I hope that, you know, I haven't burst your bubble as far as how what a whole Waldorf homeschool day looks like. But it really is nothing, you know, out of the ordinary. I mean, it's fantastic, and it's really all about rhythm. You know, and then there's, like I said, there's a little schooling there. So the rhythm is really the big key. So, yeah, I mean, that's all I have to really say about that. So let's move on to curriculum. What types of curriculum are right for you? So this is a kind of a big subject here, and, you know, this might be something you're like, okay, I want to find out this right away. What's my curriculum type? There's a few questions I want you to ask yourself to kind of narrow this down, because there are quite a few, you know, curriculums out there. Of course, you can, there's a do-it-yourself where you kind of create your own curriculum just based on, you know, what, where you're supposed to be this year, doing the fairy tales and all of that. You know, you can do your own, and a lot of people do. Just, you know, they don't buy a particular curriculum. They may buy a few supplemental books, and then they just make up their own lessons, you know, based on the fairy tales, based on, you know, they make up their own stories. They make up, you know, everything to kind of go along with it. And there are plenty of people out there who love that and do that. And I did a little bit of that myself in the beginning, because that was something I just felt comfortable doing and liked doing. And it worked out great. And it's not that I don't like it. But I realized that running a business and doing that, it just was too much for me. And I had to be realistic and say I'd love to be able to do that every day and every week, but it wasn't realistic for me. So I had to get something that I at least had a backbone, that I had something there that I could follow. And then I can kind of bring my own flair and add my own projects and tweak things and I don't really want to do that, let's do this other thing. But at least I had something there as my base, my starting point, my springboard. So let's look at the first thing there, and that's time. I think that's a big issue for most of us, is how much time do we have? And so before you go out there and start looking at the curriculums that you love, let's really look at where you are. Instead of, you know, looking for something, figure out what would be right for you and then go look, you know, based on that. And that is, how much time do you have to devote to planning your daily or weekly lessons? Because, and I really want you to be honest, like I just said, if you have one child and you're not working, you know, and you've got a spouse or whatever and you've got support, you'll have some time. And you may want, if you're very crafty, you know, this may be the thing just for you that you want to kind of, you know, dip your foot in and make your own curriculum up pretty much, or just use some books here and there. And that's great. But if you have three children, maybe one's a baby and you've got a toddler and a seven-year-old, you know, it may not be as feasible. Or if you've got two or three children in the grade, then you have to do more than one grade. If you have to plan three grades, you know, that could get quite taxing if you've got to, you know, do main lessons for all of those. And it could take a lot of time. So, you know, or if you work part-time or work out of the home or have a job or your own business, you know, again, take all of that, your regular responsibilities and what time you have, even while you're not homeschooling, you know, do you have any free time or are you just totally slammed? And then don't, you know, put yourself in a situation where adding this huge homeschooling planning thing, you know, it's just going to kind of set you up for failure. Even though you may really want to do it at this time, it's not feasible. But by having a curriculum that's all planned, it is feasible. Then you have to decide, you know, you've got to pick something that really works for you. And doesn't stress you out. So really be honest there. Take a look at how much time you have. The second thing is your personality or your temperament. And that's another thing. If you're a very organized person who likes to kind of control what's happening, love details and all that planning out, then, again, that might be something that you find, you know, just a curriculum that doesn't have everything planned day to day just gives you some general ideas, and you can kind of take that and run with it. And that's awesome, you know, and that's great. Or if you're just more of a person that really has to follow something, you know, step by step, then it's taking that into consideration. If you're sort of a go with the flow kind of person, kind of, again, looking at that, you might say, oh my gosh, I just would love this over here. But be realistic with yourself. Are you a person who's really going to follow through? Are you going to plan ahead? Are you going to be the one to be able to do that? Because it does take some discipline to do it. And if you look at your track record, not to say you can't, but you know in your heart that that's not you and you're probably won't be able to follow through, then you don't want, you know, your child to be the one ending up with not getting what they need to get. You know, from your, even though, because you just wanted a certain lesson plan or some curriculum that looked really pretty online or whatever. And the third thing is about cost. And this also could be a factor depending, you know, on, you know, how many grades you have to purchase or, you know, what investment you would like to make. Because some of them are pretty reasonable, you know, and then some are a little more expensive. Not to say they're not worth it, because they probably are. I mean, they're great, and a lot of the stuff is very amazing, and there's a lot of stuff. So that just, if cost is a factor too, you know, take a look at that. Do I have to buy just one grade? If you do, then you can go ahead and invest, maybe if that's the one you want, and know that you can resell those depending on the curriculum. There's certain rules depending on whose you have. Some will let you sell it back, and some will not. But you can also get that on the Yahoo group where you can buy used curriculum. And then this is what I do. I buy the stuff. I use it for the year. And when I'm done, I sell it back. And I get, you know, the money back or most of the money back to put in for the next year. So it's just, you know, it's on to someone else who can use it as a discount. And then great for me because I can purchase what I need for the next year. And I don't mind making the initial investment because I know I'll get most of it back. And I have every time on any of the materials, toys, books, you know, anything that's still in, you know, good shape or halfway decent shape, and most of it lasts, and you can really get it, you know, the money back when your kids have outgrown it or you've gone on. Or if you've got another child in another grade and you know you'll be using it again, then it's like you get double the money. You can hang on to it and use that when your younger child is coming up to the first grade or whatever. So take a look at that. If something is just, you know, totally out of your budget, you know, then, you know, best not to even kind of go there and look at it. And there's plenty out there you can get for a reasonable price, so you don't have to feel like you're really missing out at all. Okay, and we can talk a little bit more about that. I am going to be adding some audios that I did last year for our expo that I interviewed moms who had used like the top five, I think, or six curriculums out there. And it was them, it was moms who had used them for at least 2 to 3 years. I wanted them to be pretty versed with the whole curriculum, not just 1 year. And they kind of told how it's laid out, you know, what the features and benefits are, what they liked about that curriculum. So you can hear directly from the moms that use it. I have not used every curriculum, though I have seen, I think, all of them. I haven't used every one every year, of course. So this way you can kind of hear it from them, and I'll let you have those audio so that you can take a listen and see, maybe you'll hear right away what you like, you know, about something or that might interest you, that you can go check it out. And I will have all of those up on the website so you can check them out. And if you have questions after you've listened to them, please post and I'll be happy to answer them. Or, you can always contact the person directly who, you know, wrote that curriculum if you've got questions. And I'm usually very happy to answer anything. And you can certainly tell them that I sent you over there because I know most of them. okay, so again, you can also do something on your own, which is making your own curriculum. I talked a little bit about that, where you could get, you know, a few fairy tale books from the library. Let's just use first grade as an example. First grade is an easy thing. In one way, it's easy because now looking back, it seemed easy, but at the time, I really wanted something that I could follow so I knew exactly, you know, all the stories that went along, all the fairy tales, whatever. But you could certainly get fairy tales from the library and some nature stories. Teach the four processes through the stories about math gnomes, you know, you can find online or even make up your own. Some use squirrels and things. It's all very doable without purchasing a done-for-you curriculum. Could really be done. I did this a lot in the second grade. I felt a little more confident about, okay, I kind of got a handle on it now. We've got fables from the library, and I just used that and kind of made up my own, you know, kind of blocks there. We did tall tales. A lot of the legend stories and that kind of thing. So I kind of braved myself out there in the second grade. And even though I did have something I was following, I mostly did a lot of that myself. And it can be done, you know, and it can be done in the earlier grades pretty simply just by, you know, borrowing books from the library. You may already have some of these books. And you can, you know, you can do it yourself. So that's also another, you don't feel like you have to purchase a done-for-you curriculum. You can have just some supplemental books here and there. And, you know, your basics for circle time and the things you need, and you can totally, that's a totally doable way to do it as well. And I know there are many out there that do that. So don't want you to feel like you have to buy a curriculum. Okay, so let's go on to setting up your homeschool space. And again, I've got pictures that you can look at on the video that I did and also on the PDF of our school room. This actually was taken a couple years ago. I might post a more recent one up here. But basically, again, this is our dining room space. You can see the table that we have right here, you know, the main lesson books. But, you just have to look in your house and see what space you have. Maybe you have a dining room like I have that you really don't use, or maybe there's a bedroom. But I tend to think that it's to be better to be out in an area that's in the main living space, whether it's a kitchen, a dining room, a living room or something, because probably you're not going to want to be back in a back bedroom, especially if you have other children running around. They're going to want to be around near the kitchen, you know, to get supplies of water or snacks. So probably one of the main living areas will work better if you can do that. You know, even if you just have a kitchen or dining room table that you use, you know, during your school time, it doesn't have to be a specific room set aside. It can be done at a desk or even a coffee table. It could be done sitting on a couch. It doesn't have to be. It could be done outside. A lot of times we do our school outside. It's a beautiful day. Let's just go outside and do school. Why do we have to sit in here? You know, as long as there's something to write on or paint on, or even if you're not, if they're just listening, they may just have to sit and listen to you tell a story. So don't be afraid to kind of think outside the box there as far as your schooling and where you can do it. You know, you may have a back porch that's enclosed or a screen porch or something, you know, that might be the perfect spot if it overlooks a garden or you've got a beautiful view. try to give the children that kind of nature-y space depending on, you know, what you've got available. Even if you're just in an apartment, you know, you've got a small space, you've got a table of some type, even use a snack tray or something if you have to, you know, small little table or in the kids' room, even if you have a desk or something, you have to use it. There's no excuse, really. You can just use anything. It doesn't have to be something that's set up so, you know, spectacularly, depending on your what you have available. So, the things you really need to have, I would say, is a desk or a table or something to write on, and some kind of cabinet, shelf, or some kind of a place to house your materials. So it could be just like a bookshelf that you make a little room on where you can put some of your materials, a cabinet that you share. In the picture here, I've got some cabinets. And then on the other side, we have a pantry, which is for our food and or supplies. I share with my chalk and different things in there, so we've shared that pantry. So wherever you can, you know, make a little bit of a room, and if you can kind of, if it has doors or you can close, all the better, you know, so that you don't have to stare at all the stuff, or maybe use a silk to cover it up, a beautiful silk to cover something you've dyed together that you can cover up. If it's just like an open bookshelf, you can just kind of put it in front. And that's, and then a few basic materials, but basically, there's not a whole lot that you have to have is what I'm saying. There are some things you can have, and I've got some more things listed here, like an art board, a white piece of, I don't even know what it is. It's not like a laminate. It's like a thin art board. We got ours years ago, and we still use the same ones for painting, a painting board, or I call it art board, painting board. We have recently, I added two small chalkboards for them. Like they're like little slates. They're a little bit bigger than that. They're about probably about 8.5, 11 size that they use for math problems, form drawing. We've gotten into more difficult form drawing, so something that they can practice on before they put it in their main lesson books. I have a chalkboard on the wall that I use. I've seen big chalkboards that people have that are on like wheels that they wheel in and out, or just one of those that you can hold up and draw your chalkboard drawing on. It is nice to have a chalkboard. Some people have even paint their walls with the chalkboard paint, and right in their kitchens or their dining rooms or wherever, and then have a little space that they just paint right on the wall with the chalkboard paint, and then make that into a chalkboard. And you can paint over it, if you want to, if you move or whatever, change rooms. Also, a drawing pad made out of newspaper and brown bags from the grocery store. There's a link to that right on our PDF. You can make those little drawing pads to put under your drawings. They're really nice and easy, and you can make them new ones anytime you need. And, of course, some basic supplies, which I'll list here as some, basic kind of startup supplies that you'll need, block crayons. And it really depends on the ages of your child to begin with. Like first grade, you really only need 3 colors of crayons, the blue, the red, and the yellow. So you could really do this on a budget. I will give you one hint, is to get yourself supplies. You'll need a main lesson book. You'll need 3 crayons. You'll need a paint board, an art board. I didn't think that I would need it. And I didn't think about it. I just ordered 2 of everything for the girls. And then when it was time for me to show them how to do it, I was like, oh, I need one of these too. So get yourself a paintbrush. Get yourself, a main lesson book. Get yourself, an art board. And so if you, just make sure you have a section. We do share like the crayons and the the crayons I think I do on my own set. We share the colored pencils and pens and that kind of thing now that we've gotten a lot. The girls are a little older. But in the beginning, there's just a few things, like I was saying, the block crayons, if you want to have a couple stick crayons. You don't even need pencils. We introduced pencils in this the end of third grade. And pens, you don't need anything like that. Colored pencils, I think I've got some in second grade and third grade. The paints, you'll need the, I use the Stockmar, again, 3 colors. Blue, yellow, and red. The paint, one paintbrush. You can use a natural sponge or any kind of sponge. I use just a big, and I've got this on my video. You can see a big, it's a big plastic bin that I think was for toys. And we just use that. You can use like one of those Rubbermaids, to dip if you want to wet the paper right there. You can use that. And just the main lesson books.
And, you know, you'll need a few things here and there, like some silks and maybe some beeswax. But just, you know, there's really not a whole lot. Maybe some counting. I use those little jewels in the first and second grade, little round gems you can get at the craft store. They were the gnome's jewels. They look like those little round, they're flat, though, not like pebbles, but flat things you might put, not like the things in a fish tank. These are a little bit, look like a penny almost, the size of a penny, but a little bit thicker. And I got them in the same gnome colors, yellow, blue, red, and green. And then we use those for counting. So those are some things you might need right away. When they start to learn the fourth, probably the end of first grade and second grade, where they really start getting into counting and making the piles for division and multiplication and things like that. So you can really get started with just the basics of what you need and just add as you go. And these things will last you so long that it's worth it. They may seem like, oh my gosh, do I have to spend that much for paints? But like you'll use those paints the whole year and maybe even 2 years, depending on how much you paint. Some good painting paper, that's the other thing you'll need, some thicker weight painting paper for the painting. And anything else I'll just kind of add on to my list here of some kind of basic supplies to get started. I use baby food jars to mix the paint and the water, you know, just any kind of pickle jars, you know, just when you rinse out instead of putting in the recycle bin, you know, for their water, for their paints. And we just keep the same paints. We keep them all together in a bin. And in the early days, they just had like a T-shirt or an art smock to put over their clothes to keep it right all together so they don't get paint everywhere. And it's really not that difficult. There's not a lot of stuff that's needed. We don't need all kinds of things. We just need a few things that we use that last a while. They're great quality, and they're worth every penny because they last. All right. If you have any questions as far as any other things, like to get started, you know, what you need or where you can do it, you know, go ahead and post. I'm going to go ahead and let it go at this. I don't want to overwhelm you too much. But again, ask questions, and I'll be happy to answer them. And don't forget to watch the video and listen to the audios about the curriculum. And I'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.